Chapter 13, The Evening Lecture, by A.T. Jones. Whomsoever the Son makes free is free indeed, the Savior said. And in setting them free religiously, he set them free in all respects. Slaves were Christ's free men, and masters became Christ's servants. Without religious freedom, there can be no such thing as civil freedom. Without liberty in one, there can be none in the other. In setting men free, the Savior bound them to him and to God in an allegiance that cannot be broken, nor can anything separate from him. And the disciples were sent into the world to teach this to all the world. But the Roman government filled all the world, and its laws said that no man should have any god except those recognized by Rome. The God of the Christians was not admitted by it, and therefore God was a strange one to the government. Another law forbid the introduction of a new religion, under penalty of banishment or death, and Christians, in preaching Christianity, set themselves in opposition to the established laws, which were on the statute books long before there was a Christian. The law was not enacted because of them, and hence they had no chance to call it persecution when they were punished. So that to claim a right to preach Christ was in the eyes of the Romans rebellion against the government. Neander says that the idea of the state was the highest idea of ethics known to the Romans, and therefore to a Roman what the law said was right. This included all actual realization of the highest idea of good, the highest good a man could accomplish. But to a Christian, in Christianity, there was a far superior good that put the Roman government in a secondary place. Now for anyone to ask Rome to take a subordinate position was treason. The genius of Rome was the supreme deity. The government of Rome derived no dignity or honor from her gods, but from the state itself. Whatever the Roman law said was good could be worshipped, and no other. In conquering all nations and gods, the idea was fixed that the state was supreme, extending even to the Jewish nation and their God. So when the Christian preached a superior God, it was treason, and he became a traitor. The Romans were very jealous about their gods. He called attention to a fallacious pagan idea or maxim. The voice of the people is the voice of God. Such a thing can never be. The standard of Rome carried out this idea. The Senate and the people of Rome were the voice of God. In quoting from Civil Government, the speaker read, "The more exalted a Roman became, the less freedom he had. The whole duty of man was to keep his house in order and be a humble, devoted citizen of the state." So then, the religion of the Christian was directly opposed to the Roman laws, and Christians were necessarily guilty of high treason. Rome could not stand this, and so the Roman Empire enforced the law and punished them. Now, if religious subjects are proper matter for legislation, then Rome never persecuted the Christians. She simply enforced the law. So of England and our own country with the Quakers, etc. Enforcement of law is right and cannot be called persecution. If the law was right, killing the Christians was right. But men in this country need not talk against the Romans so long as they seek to make laws for the Lord's Day and to enforce the observance of it. The papacy, going on the same principle, enforced the laws simply. All that was done to Huss when he was burned was to enforce the law. What we must do is what the Christians did, and that is to say that the Romans' law was wrong, and that they had no right to have such laws. Now, did the Roman emperors precede the Christians? Now, really, did they? He set Rome on fire and laid the blame on the Christians, burning them and tormenting them. No pretense of enforcing the laws was made in this case. Domitian banished John to the Isle of Patmos, but it was not persecution. John happened to incur suspicion with many others and was banished instead of being killed, but it had nothing to do with his Christianity. Domitian's successors undid all that Domitian had done, and among others recalled John. The four best emperors Rome ever had, Trajan, Hadrian, Antoninus Pius, and Marcus Aurelius, were the ones who persecuted Christians, and it has always been a mystery to scholars. These enforced the laws because they respected them, but the tyrants cared nothing for the laws. Hence, Christians were left in peace. So when the laws were broken under good emperors, the laws were enforced, but not so under the tyrants. So then the wickedness was not in the men, but in the laws, which were not such as any nation had a right to have on their statute books. The speaker then read from Gibbon's History of Rome to show how these emperors enforced the laws, and others paid no attention to them, and the letters of Pliny to Trajan, asking what to do, and Trajan's reply telling him not to seek after the Christians. But if informed against, the law was to be enforced if they would not obey it. A government has no alternative but to enforce the laws or abdicate. The government did not seek out the Christians, but the populace would get up a riot if any calamity occurred, and it would be blamed to Christians, and they would be thrown to wild beasts or otherwise killed. Finally, Hadrian issued a decree that no Christian should be accused, and all rioters should be held in place of the Christians, against whom nothing should be done except in regular course of law. Antoninus Pius did not issue any edict against the Christians, but he allowed riots to occur, and that brought back the persecution of Christians. But Marcus Aurelius, the best emperor the government ever had, issued a decree to hunt up and destroy the Christians because of his respect for the law. Now these are the only persecutions committed to the time of Decius. The speaker then read from the same authority, in reference to Commodus Caracallus and other tyrants of Rome, to show that none of them persecuted Christians or enforced the law, although filling Rome with the blood of their enemies, Caracalla causing the death of over 20,000 such, and was called the common enemy of mankind. It may be Christians suffered with others, but not because they were Christians. Then, so far as the emperors of Rome were concerned, there was no persecution of Christians. It all came from among the neighbors, who informed against them, and the law had to be enforced. The speaker read from his work, Civil Government, quotations to this effect from various authors to show how impossible it was for a Christian to attend any public gathering or even witness the marriage of his own daughter or the funeral of his own relatives, because all ceremonies were in honor of their gods, and he could not take part in them. Because of such refusals, they incurred the hatred of their neighbors, so that a Christian was never safe, day or night, being liable to public vengeance at any moment. The iniquity of the thing was in the laws, which gave the people opportunities to complain of and persecute Christians. When arrested, the magistrates would try to save them, ask them to simply sprinkle some incense on the altar, then they would be forgiven and obtain their certificate. Yet upon their refusal, the magistrate would become angry at their so-called stubbornness and would punish them to the full extent of the law, practically being put to death for their stubbornness and not for bribing the law. Some would offer to sell certificates to the Christians, which would protect them, and if refused, he would kill them in self-protection, that they could not inform against him. But because these men, women, and children thus declared their right to worship God according to the dictates of their own conscience, you and I are able to be here tonight to assert our right to religious freedom, a right which men are attempting to deprive us of, and will revive the same spirit of persecution as existed in ancient Rome.